It's Monday, December 28th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you had a wonderful holiday week. I know that I did. I made the road trip across the state of Oregon all the way back to my folks' place in Nampa, Idaho, just outside of Boise. Got a couple of great presents. I'm wearing one of them right now. It goes back to the September game between Boise State and the University of Oregon Ducks. You know, my team, Boise State, plays on blue turf. And for the longest time when the blue turf was first installed, people used to say that the ducks used to crash land on the turf thinking that it was a lake of some sort. Of course, that was a myth, but it was a long-standing myth when the turf was first unveiled during my sophomore year of college. Well, this shirt that I've got says, "The myth is true, ducks do crash land on the blue." Feature, which of course is reference to them getting walloped by my Boise State Broncos in the first game of the season. So glad to have that shirt. Another Christmas gift, my brother bought us tickets to go see the movie Avatar in 3D. I highly recommend this movie to anyone that wants to see it. It's just amazing. The 3D effects are incredible. It is about a 3-hour movie, though, so make sure you use the restroom before you get into the theater. But really, go out and see this film. It's definitely worth it. A couple of notes here from Normal West Coast Media headquarters here in Portland, Oregon. My schedule is all sorts of crazy this week. I am filling in for Bill Press on The Bill Press Show. You can check that out at BillPressShow.com. It's the leading morning drive time progressive political talk radio show on the East Coast. So that's a long way of saying that from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. East Coast time, there's a lot of people listening to me talk about politics. Of course, if you're good at the time zones, you know that 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the East Coast means that I'm talking at 3 in the morning my time, getting up at 2 a.m. To make my way to the KPOJ studios to do the show. It's a 3-hour show. Today was a great show. We talked about the healthcare reform going before the Senate and the House. We also talked about that terrorism incident in Detroit where the man tried to blow up the plane. I'd love to get a chance to talk to some of you Stashers live if you happen to be up during that time, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific or 6 to 9 Eastern time. Check out BillPressShow.com for details on which stations are airing the show. I had callers today from Chicago and Wilmington, Delaware and Modesto, California, so I know there's plenty of stations all across the country. I'd love to get a chance to talk to you. Also, want to let you know that this week is the last week of this format for the Daily Audio Stash. You may have been following for a while now and know that we are changing to a live format beginning January 4th. We're taking Normal Show Live that normally appeared on Saturday nights and the Daily Audio Stash that appears every weekday and just merging the two and making Normal Show Live a live weekday talk radio show at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time every day for an hour at live.normal.org. Now, for those of you who are subscribed to the podcast, you have one of those daily audio stash players, don't worry. We're going to send the feeds all the information for the new files that Blog Talk Radio puts together. So from your point of view, the transition should be seamless. You should still receive your podcast in your iTunes or in your iPod, just like you always have. And if you've got one of those players embedded on your webpage, it should still play like it always has. The advantage, though, is that we'll do the show live, so we'll get to have more interaction with callers, we'll get to have some live interviews, we should generate more advertisers and a much bigger base of audience and listeners, as well as making my life a little bit easier by curtailing some of the editing tasks that are required for the podcast. So really looking forward to it. January 4th, live.normal.org. Check us out. Also, don't forget, this Thursday is the last episode of The Stash, and it just so happens to be the 420th episode of the podcast that I have produced. So we're doing a live New Year's Eve show. This will be Thursday night, New Year's Eve, and we're starting at midnight Eastern time. That would be 9 p.m. Pacific, and we're going all the way to midnight Pacific time, or 3 a.m. Eastern. The idea here is that we're going to celebrate the new year in all four continental U.S. time zones. We'll be speaking to members of Normal chapters all across the country to find out how they're celebrating the new year. And of course, we'll be broadcasting live from Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe in Portland, Oregon, to get the flavor of the Pacific Northwest party. So check us out this New Year's Eve at live.normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your cannabis community calendar, followed up by your hemp headlines and a look at the racial disparity of arrests in New York City for marijuana use. We've got four states in the United States that will be pursuing legalization measures in their legislature, and some reefer madness from La Center, Washington, and a woman who claims marijuana use is, quote, insidiously dangerous, end quote. Our Daily Toker Tunes today are brought to you by Cannabis Carry and Planet Fantastic. Today is Roots Monday, and we'll be hearing from Two Smooth Stones and their song Free the Weed. And then for our cannabis conversations, we return to Tennessee to visit once again with our friend Bernie Ellis. He's a man in Tennessee who's been pursued by the federal government on marijuana charges. He's most recently settled that case by signing away a portion of his land to the federal government. Bernie will give us all the particulars in our cannabis conversations. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
There is peaceful solution called a peace revolution, and now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
Me a bow or fill me a bomb. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. On Wednesday, December 30th, KC Normal will be on 90.1 FM KKFI live from Kansas City, Missouri, and streaming live at kkfi.org on the last Wednesday of every month. Featured guests will include Kelly Maddie from Joplin Normal, along with hosts Brandon Ryan and Chris Smith. Check out kcnormal.org for more details or call 888-KC-NORMAL. Thursday, December 31st is New Year's Eve and our special Normal Show Live taking place at live.normal.org on the internet from 9 p.m. Pacific Time to midnight Pacific Time. Friday, January 1st, 2010 is New Year's Day. There will be no podcast presented on Friday. And on Saturday, there will be no Normal Show Live airing. In fact, there will be no Normal Show Live on any Saturday from here on out. For more details on all of these events, including websites, contact information, and more, check out the Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
It's a Normal shout-out.
My shout-out today goes to the state of Idaho, the state of my birth. I just visited for Christmas, and I'm reminded of how much Idaho really needs some active Normal chapters. Now, I received some emails recently from some folks out in the Pocatello area, Idaho State University in particular, and I've met with some people in Boise previously about the issue. I also get some emails from the Lewiston area, Coeur d'Alene, and Twin Falls, all interested in starting Normal chapters. But as conservative as the state is, it seems like once we start to get the ball rolling and people realize they will be the public face of marijuana legalization, it all seems to fall apart. So we are giving a shout out today to brave and dedicated individuals who want to be the public face of marijuana legalization in Idaho. With these legalization bills pending in Washington and California and legalization initiatives pending in Washington, Oregon, California, and Nevada, it seems natural that we need to start the process of educating the citizens of Idaho as to why they need to join them in legalization of cannabis. So help us out. Send me an email at stash@normal.org with the subject line Idaho chapter, and I'll do what I can to get your chapter started.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook rolls all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. New York City. Whites smoke pot, but blacks are arrested for it. From the New York Times. Outside a music club on Greenwich Street in Soho, the bouncers smoke joints as they check in the arriving customers. A young graphic artist routinely strolls through Chelsea, joint in hand, and when a publicist calls her supplier to order pot, she uses code words, a studio, a one or two bedroom, to signal how much she wants. But the Soho bouncers and the Chelsea graphic artist don't have much to worry about, at least from the police. They are white. Even though surveys show they are part of the demographic group that makes the heaviest use of pot, white people in New York are the least likely to be arrested for it. Last year, black New Yorkers were 7 times more likely than whites to be arrested for marijuana possession and no more serious crime. Latinos were 4 times more likely. In 2008, the police made more pot arrests than in the 12 years of Mayor Koch, plus the 4 years of Mayor Dinkins, plus the first 2 years of Mayor Giuliani, according to Queens College professor Harry Levine, who has studied the racial disparity in marijuana arrests. Quote, in other words, in 1 year, 2008, Mayor Bloomberg made more pot arrests than in 18 years of Koch, Dinkins, and Giuliani combined. End quote. Mr. Bloomberg's chief criminal justice aide, John Feinblatt, declined to discuss the city's approach to marijuana arrests or the findings of the study. But through a spokesman, he issued a statement maintaining the pot arrests have helped drive down violent crime. Quote, marijuana arrests, which rarely lead to jail, are concentrated in neighborhoods with the highest concentrations of violent crime because that's where the police focus their attention in order to reduce victimization, Mr. Feinblatt said. This continued focus on low-level offending has been part of the city's effective crime reduction strategy, which has resulted in a 35% decrease in crime since 2001, end quote. In effect, Mr. Feinblatt was arguing a variation on the broken windows theory of crime fighting, that cracking down on symptoms of public disorder helps head off more serious problems. So in other words, a black guy smoking a joint in Harlem is a symptom of larger public disorder, but a white girl smoking a joint in Chelsea is a symptom of a fun night on the town. This broken windows theory doesn't make any sense at all. The idea is that if you let low-level offenses slide, people in the community feel a sense of lawlessness and disregard for the neighborhood, so higher-level crimes begin to flourish. Now, I can see that making sense when we're talking about graffiti and loitering and actual broken windows, but not with adults smoking pot. If the pot smoking is a crime symptom, then why don't we get the same kind of crime stats in Chelsea as we do Harlem? We surely don't see the same level of graffiti, loitering, and broken windows in Chelsea, do we? We all know how smoking a joint mellows a person out. Who's to say that the crime stats in Harlem are worse because we're motivating young people to use alcohol in place of cannabis so that they won't get picked up by Bloomberg's NYPD? We certainly know that once that young person is arrested for pot smoking, he or she gets a black mark on his or her record that makes finding employment more difficult, a task that is already difficult for urban young people of color. High rates of unemployment contribute more to public disorder and crime than any marijuana cigarette ever could. What this is really about is getting the fingerprints and booking information from as many young blacks and Latinos as possible. It harkens back to President Nixon's infamous quote, as told to Chief of Staff H.R. Haldeman, according to Haldeman's diaries, quote, "You have to face the fact that the whole problem is really the blacks. The key is to devise a system that recognizes this all while not appearing to," end quote. 4 states so far weighing marijuana legalization in 2010. Olympia, Washington, from the Associated Press. Washington is one of 4 states where measures to legalize and regulate marijuana have been introduced, and about 24 other states are considering bills ranging from medical marijuana to decriminalizing possession of small amounts of the herb. Legalization bills were introduced in California and Massachusetts earlier this year, and this month, New Hampshire and Washington State pre-filed bills in advance of their legislative sessions that begin in January. Marijuana is illegal under federal law, but guidelines have been loosened on federal prosecution of medical marijuana under the Obama administration. Representative Mary Lou Dickerson, a Seattle Democrat who is sponsoring the legalization bill in Washington State, said that she, quote, "wanted to start a strong conversation about the pros and cons of legalizing marijuana," end quote. Under her bill, marijuana would be sold in Washington State's 160 state-run liquor stores, and customers 21 and older would pay a tax of 15% per gram. Wait a minute. A 15% tax per gram? Does that make any sense? Isn't 15% of something still 15% no matter how much of it you have? I mean, if I buy a gram that's taxed at 15%, or I buy a ton that's taxed at 15%, the 15% is still 15%, right? Also, I would caution Washington lawmakers about this idea of selling weed in the liquor stores. We polled that idea in Oregon, and it was soundly rejected by the tokers, the drinkers, and the teetotalers. The pot smokers didn't want marijuana, associated with a dangerous drug like alcohol, and a corrupt institution like the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The alcohol drinkers didn't want a bunch of potheads in their liquor stores. And the teetotalers thought putting weed with alcohol sent the message that weed is to be celebrated like alcohol is in our culture. While these four states' likelihood of actually passing legalization is fairly low, it is remarkable that marijuana legalization is now a topic that can be broached at our highest levels of government without being laughed out of the statehouse.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Letter to the editor. Marijuana is, quote, insidiously dangerous, end quote. Oh, goody, some reefer madness from Sandra Bennett, the co-editor of the Marijuana Research Review in La Center, Washington, writing a letter to the editor of the Washington Times.
Regarding the views of Joyce Nalepka about the increased use and impact of marijuana on our children and society in general, she is absolutely right. As an individual who was dragged kicking and screaming into the parental prevention movement following the drug-related death of our son in 1986...
But your son didn't die from marijuana now, did he?
I have followed the plethora of scientific studies done on marijuana. There are more than 20,000 of them, and am perplexed as to why the media suppresses this information, much as they did to studies showing the dangers associated with smoking tobacco.
The media suppresses bad news about the dangers of marijuana? Oh boy, that's news to us. If you'd like a quick refresher on just how many mainstream media stories regurgitate your tired prohibitionist talking points about the dangers of marijuana, just visit our Reefer Madness archive at stash.normal.org/category/reefer-madness.
The bottom line is that marijuana, which is often 20 times more potent today than it was in the 1960s and 1970s, is insidiously dangerous.
20 times more potent. Once again, it's not your father's Woodstock weed. Here's what I want to know. If the highest quality marijuana today is registering in the 15% to 20% THC potency range, and it's 20 times more potent than the hippie dope of the 70s, that means the Woodstock generation was smoking weed with a THC content of 0.75 to 1.0%, or what we'd consider industrial hemp. How is it that my dad's generation came up with bell bottoms, Laugh-In, and Sergeant Pepper, smoking hemp that would just give you a headache? Also, if the hyper-potent pot 2.0 is so insidiously dangerous compared to the 70s weed, why were they locking up young people for smoking pot in the 70s? Wouldn't that less than 1% THC weed be 20 times less dangerous than today's? What's the excuse for not even letting us use low THC industrial hemp then?
It is the leading cause of drug-related emergency room episodes.
Wrong. It is the leading drug mentioned in emergency room episodes. When people end up in the ER, they are asked if they used any drugs, and their system is often tested for drugs. Since marijuana remains detectable in the system for weeks following use, it is impossible to determine that marijuana caused the person to be admitted to the emergency room. They might as well say, McDonald's cheeseburgers are the favorite fast food burger of people who go to the emergency room. Sure, it's true, but just because McDonald's is so popular, not because McDonald's had anything to do with the trip to the ER.
It is associated with psychiatric disorders, cancer, and infertility, and has a negative impact on the immune system, not to mention a host of other medical problems it causes.
Except that marijuana use doesn't lead to psychiatric disorders, provides a reduced risk of cancers, doesn't affect fertility, and doesn't compromise the immune system, not to mention a host of other medical problems cannabis therapies have been proven to treat.
This list doesn't even touch on the many social issues involved. Marijuana is sometimes mentioned as a factor in child abuse cases and in tragic accidents.
The marijuana factor in child abuse is usually a situation where an adult has smoked or grown marijuana in the presence of their children, and the very presence of the pot is considered abuse. If such a standard were employed for pharmaceuticals and alcohol and tobacco in the home, I'd wager that a majority of Americans are guilty of this kind of abuse. As for tragic accidents, are we talking about someone who gets high, doesn't pay attention while walking across the street, and gets hit by a bus? That kind of accident? Look, I'll concede that while high, people's reaction times and coordination are impaired, and that may lead to a greater risk of accident. But by that standard, we need to prohibit cell phones, fast food, sexy billboards, and certainly alcohol and tobacco. The fact that a minority may misuse a substance is not justification to imprison the majority who will use it responsibly.
It is definitely not a benign substance. Crude marijuana may mask the symptoms of some medical ailments, as crude opium once did, but it is not and should not be used as a therapeutic agent.
Well, no mind-altering substance is purely benign, but on the list of such substances, marijuana is the most benign. But Sandra's dead wrong on the idea that marijuana just masks the symptoms of some medical ailments. Research is now showing us that not only is cannabis a superior remedy for some of these symptoms, but that it actually works toward preventing certain diseases, like some cancers, and slowing or reversing the progression of other diseases, like multiple sclerosis.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today. It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Cannabis Carrie, welcome to Roots Monday. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday weekend and are enjoying your short week toward the new year. For decades now, the cannabis that comes from Humboldt, California is the stuff legends are made of. We go to this rich, fertile region for today's toker-friendly tune by the folk duo Two Smooth Stones and their anthemic song, Free the Weed. Two Smooth Stones is really Bill Holmes on vocals and rhythm guitar and James Mandich on guitar and harp. They call Eureka, California home, and they play in Northern California and Oregon. Today's tune harkens back to the free-feeling sounds of the 60s and 70s that poured out of Northern California like a siren calling all the cool people to pack up, head out west, and join the movement. If you would like to hear more of their music, you can visit their MySpace page at myspace.com/twosmoothstones. They are also active in the blogosphere in Humboldt at HighBoldage.com. That's HighBoldage.com, where you can find all kinds of things about politics and music in the Northern California region. 2010 is calling. Free the weed indeed. Now here's Two Smooth Stones and Free the Weed.
Hey, 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 Mr. DEA, get yourself alive and go away. All we wanna do is smoke some weed. Hey, 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 Mr. FBI, get yourself a clue and go bye-bye. All we wanna do is smoke some weed. Free the weed, let us smoke some pot. Free the weed, it's the only thing we've got. It's all we got. It's all we got. Hey, 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 Mr. DA man, cut us some slack. I know you can. All we wanna do is smoke some weed. Free the weed, let us smoke some pot. Free the weed, it's the only thing we've got. It's all we got. All we
of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch-long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. 2 months ago on the Daily Audio Stash show, we visited with a man from Fry, Tennessee named Bernie Ellis, who told us his story of dealing with the man, so to speak. And it turns out that story has now come to somewhat of a conclusion. So joining us here to give us an update is the man himself, Bernie Ellis. Welcome back to the show.
Russ, thanks. Glad to be here.
All right. So let's remind folks, if they didn't catch the first interview that we had done with you, just how you ended up getting in trouble with the man.
Well, for about a 20-year period, I grew cannabis here in Tennessee for my own use, primarily to deal with pain and discomfort, degenerative joint disease, fibromyalgia, and a few other conditions I've got. Mm-hmm. But from the beginning, I also provided it at no cost to seriously ill people here in my community. And over the years, the word got out that if someone was facing chemotherapy, you know, that they could approach me and I would help them. In 2002, after not having any problems for, you know, 15 or more years doing this, a local dealer tried to buy from me at harvest time, and I refused to sell to him. So he turned me into the Marijuana Eradication Task Force. That started a 7-year process that, on the one hand, ended with a pretty lenient criminal sentence. I was facing up to 40 years in prison and ended up getting 4 years of probation that was later cut to 2 years with no fine. But as your listeners, I'm sure, know, marijuana growers face a double jeopardy, not only a criminal charge, but an effort by the government to confiscate our farms. And indeed, the government did try to confiscate my 187-acre farm for what amounted to 7 pounds of usable pot. So finally, after a 7-year battle that had many, many twists and turns, we settled with my having to cut off 25 acres from my farm to give to the government, which works out to about 3 acres of land for every pound of usable pot I had. But in exchange, they then have removed the lien from the rest of my farm. So I now own free and clear what's left in my own name.
Wow. What a tragic story here. And this is the side of marijuana eradication that people don't know a lot about, this civil asset forfeiture side, where it's not you, Bernie Ellis, who's accused of a crime, but it's your actual land that's accused of a crime, and it's considered guilty until proven innocent.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, the irony and the tragedy of this is, you know, if I had gone out and murdered the fellow who turned me in, my farm would not have been at risk or in jeopardy. If I were a rapist, you know, they couldn't take my land. But by not only growing cannabis, but freely admitting that I grew cannabis, my farm's future has hung in the balance now for 7 years. A farm, by the way, that's been mine for over 40 years. The government didn't have to and never did allege that I had purchased the land with ill-gotten gains or anything else, because, again, in 7 years, the only people they found who ever got pot from me got it for free because they were sick. But as you say, you know, they could attempt to take the farm and indeed make me have to prove the farm's innocence, so to speak, which is not only a catch-22, but a logical dead end, basically, for anyone facing that kind of charge.
Yeah, it's crazy that we still have this set up this way. I mean, the original intent of these asset forfeiture laws, the idea was, you know, you're going to be Tony Montana, you know, some big drug lord, and you're going to collect yachts and planes and all sorts of mansions and gold toilet seats or whatever, and the government would punish you because those are ill-gotten gains from your drug empire, and they would use that money that they seize to catch more crooks or to help police stations. But what we found is that really those guys don't get touched. It's the guys like you that get busted, and the money that they use from this is just more incentive for them to keep infringing on people's rights like you.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I live in a fairly small Tennessee county. Everyone in this county knows that all of the drugs, drug running operations in this county were run for decades by a sitting judge in the county. And those of us who had no desire to participate in his game, who instead grew for ourselves, you know, basically were the ones who were targeted. In the 30 to 40 years this judge ran all the vice in this county, he was never approached once by the feds, even though everyone in the county knows what's up. So you're right. It's nothing more than a racket. And it's an, you know, I know a number of, honorable law enforcement people who are as disturbed by this piracy as the rest of us.
Yeah. And as far as your farm goes, you said you have 187 acres, you had to sign over 25 to the government. Is this land, you know, of value to the government in some sort of way that they're just really highly desiring to get your land by any means possible?
Well, my neighbors thought that was the issue from the beginning, that the extent to which I was prosecuted had a lot more to do with my having a farm valued at more than $1 million than it had to do with the seriousness or social harm of my, quote, crime, unquote. So, you know, I don't know how satisfied the government is that they better be satisfied with getting 3 acres of land for every pound of pot. I mean, that's pretty good pot when it's worth that. But
so.
Yeah, I have no idea what their intention is with this land. I did appreciate a friend of mine suggesting that they make it the Bernie Ellis Wildlife Sanctuary, with wildlife spelled as two words, not one. And I think that's a great idea. I'd love for that to happen. But seriously, I have, of course, absolutely no idea or control over what they do with it. They've got to come up with money for more body bags for Afghanistan one way or the other, and this is the way they're doing it.
Yeah, I guess so. Did you get to pick which 25 acres to saw off of your property, or do they get to pick?
No, No, we offered them a specific amount, and I, you know, it was an amount that I chose. It was a piece of land that I bought from a neighbor of mine to keep him from going into bankruptcy. And when I bought the land from him, I said, look, I have no intention to ever sell this land. You know, you can keep living here, you know, and the feeling of the place shouldn't change as far as you and I are concerned. So now instead, you know, he's now going to be surrounded by, you know, whoever or whatever the government sells this land to, and there's nothing I can do about it. And for that matter, nothing he can do about it.
So. Yeah. What kind of area are we talking about out here? Are you in the, is it really rural where you're at? No development around? Are you near a town? Or what do you think
you
might put there?
We're a little less than an hour south of Nashville. I'm bordered by a national park highway, the Natchez Trace Parkway, within about 20 to 25 minutes of a couple of mid-sized cities. So, I mean, it's not isolated and undevelopable land. It's actually quite beautiful land, and with the being bordered by a national park highway, it's very desirable land. What they're getting are two of the nicest, in fact, probably the two nicest hay fields I owned. Some nice woodland and a free-flowing artesian spring that waters it all. So, you know, I really hate to lose it, and I've not been spending much time walking around on it because that just depresses me these days. But by the same token, it does feel good to finally have the government off the back, my back, and the back of the rest of my farm. It's interesting, towards the end there, they were making all kinds of wild threats, you know, to avoid this case ever being heard by a jury. That's what we wanted. But instead, they started threatening other charges and more cost, and even went so far as to ask me to agree to put a lien on the rest of my farm so that when I died, the federal government would be the first recipient in my will. And I told them, you know, I've had the burden of your piracy and nonsense for 7 years. I'm not going to carry it another day. And, you know, accept this final offer or let's go to court. Let's let 12 jurors decide. And I think it's telling that they took the final offer.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't want to have this be exposed to the average public out there, I would think.
Well, I'm sure they don't. You know, and yet perhaps they need to hide and watch because, as this interview demonstrates, you know, I'm constitutionally incapable of being quiet about injustice. And, you know, to me, the ultimate irony, and to some extent, I take some pleasure in the fact that maybe by folks like myself not being quiet about all of this and not being quiet about the need to make medical marijuana available to patients who need it, we're enjoying this tidal wave of shift in public policy now, both by the Department of Justice and the American Medical Association and others, finally, you know, coming to their senses to some extent. So, I mean, the sad news, I guess, is I signed away 25 acres on a Thursday, and on Tuesday, the American Medical Association reversed its 75-year policy against medical marijuana. So, again, those hundreds of thousands of us in the same position and the thousands of us who stood up and talked about this situation, I hope has had some impact in the change in national and state policy. But obviously we still have a long way to go to make peace with and appreciate this plant as a species. I mean, this transcends politics at one level and has to do with just you know, common sense, compassion, and science. And it's about time they took primacy again over government piracy.
Yeah, completely agreed. And this seven-year ordeal that you've been through, I imagine it must have caused enormous changes in your life and your lifestyle. What's it been like fighting the government for 7 years?
Well, I'll tell you, it hasn't been fun. And I wouldn't wish this on anyone else, but a friend of mine asked me essentially the same question a month or so ago, and I said, look, 7 years ago I was making $100,000 a year doing socially meaningful work, and I was happy. Today I'm flat broke, but I'm still doing socially meaningful work, and I'm still happy. You know, the government wins when they sap your spirit and your will, and they didn't succeed in doing that with me, so fundamentally I think they failed. But believe me, I've learned lots of ways to eat healthy foods out of the garden, because that's what I've had to rely on essentially. Things are very tight, but again, I'm hopefully optimistic that you know, if I have my way at all, I'll be one of the last names carved in the tribute wall for the war on some drugs.
Yeah. Well, we certainly hope so. Bernie Ellis from Fry, Tennessee, gentleman farmer, patriot in my book, for putting up with this battle. And, we hope all the best for you, and, be in touch again sometime. If folks want to get in touch with you or find out more about your case, is there any sort of websites or places they can go?
Yes, we still have the website up. It's, savebernisfarm.com. Of course, the latest resolution of the case isn't there, but they can read a lot about the background of the case. They can read some of the 200 letters of support submitted to the court on my behalf. They can even see some nice photographs and video from the farm. So I'd love for folks to come and visit, and more importantly, I'd love for folks to stand up and continue to be counted on this issue, because like every other revolution, if we never stop fighting, we will not lose.
That's right. Well, thank you so much, Bernie Ellis, and let's just hope that the government doesn't put up some sort of drug testing facility or incarceration center on your 25 acres.
Well, you know, if the government ever got sensible and wanted to tax cannabis, I could sure show them how to grow some on that 25 acres.
Hemp
thanks
for victory.
Again, Russ, for your time. Yeah. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bernie. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder that the upcoming year, 2010, promises to be a landmark year in marijuana law reform, with up to 4 states possibly legalizing marijuana outright and another dozen possibly legalizing medical marijuana or pursuing decriminalization. But your voice doesn't matter unless you're registered to vote. You need to be a registered voter to sign initiative petitions, and of course, to be able to vote for the representatives who will make these initiatives into law. So check out your Secretary of State's office online, or just call your local government and ask them where you can register to vote. It only takes a second. You don't necessarily have to pick a political party. You can just register as an independent if you so choose.
But without that registration, your voice means nothing to the lawmakers in your state house or in the federal government in Washington, D.C. So do it today. Register to vote. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.